It was the year of deep geeking.
The year of Feedbackapalooza.
The year we discussed our favorite show.
It was the year without Zima.
The year of great tequila.
The year of puns.
And a year of more interviews.
It was a new chance for fun.
It was the end of the series.
It was the year we made it to Crusade.
The year is 2009. The show, Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
I'm still Brett Filipek.
We're happy for that.
I haven't turned in anybody else yet.
Not yet?
Not yet. I'm working on it.
You are?
I want to be Jeffrey, actually. I want to be Jeffrey.
Ooh.
You all want to be Jeffrey.
I want to know what it was like to be inside the Vorlon suit.
What? How was it described as the fart bong? Why can't I? I'm drawing a blank on the gentleman who we had on who was in the suit before Jeffrey.
That was was Russ, was it?
Russ, yes. Thank you. I'm sorry. God, I'm not with it tonight, apparently. No, he described that it got pretty stinky in the thing.
So maybe I don't want to be Jeffrey, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically, right.
At least not inside the shower curtain.
No,
I wonder if it got any. We'll have to ask Jeffrey next time he's on. I wonder if it got any better with the Elkesh suit because they designed that around him.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Because basically, you know, the long and the short of it, when you listen to the interview with Russ, and by extension, Jeffrey, it's like they designed the Kosh encounter suit and then found somebody to squeeze inside of it rather than the other way around. You know, find your actor and then build the suit around to, you know, to work with him. So I wonder if Jeffrey's told us before that Elkesh was built with more comfort in mind. So, there you go.
I think probably the only thing that would make it for comfortable would be a bar inside. If you could somehow squeeze a bar in there,
yeah.
You know, I then maybe I'd be wanting to be the guy in the encounter suit.
Yeah, now, no, I think they only had room for a squeeze bottle of Zima in that thing.
Yeah, I would think the little tiny bottles of booze would be clinky and distracting.
No, that was the clinky noise you heard when that was the translator.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, that wasn't the Vorlon voice. That was him setting down all those little airplane bottles of bourbon.
Nice.
I'm pretty sure they probably had to make up dialogue to cover the sound, you know.
Yeah. He's whacking those bottles around again. All right, let's get Chamberlain to dub something over.
Yeah, quick, make up something witty.
Yes. That's too late for the pebbles to vote. That doesn't make any sense.
You know, I realized something while listening to our open, that we're still in our season 4 open, and my line almost didn't come true.
Right.
My line in there is the year we made it to Crusade, and we really haven't talked about Crusade yet. We had more interviews and more fun stuff than we had initially, you know,
anticipated.
Really?
Frankly.
And so now, at the very, very end, we actually start to touch the lower hem of Crusade.
We do indeed, because we have an interview tonight with the Jason Davis from the Babylon 5 book teams. And I have an apocalypse box sitting on the desk here that I'm afraid to open.
Huh.
Yeah. So
I'm almost kind of wanting to sit there and see what happens when you do.
Well, I haven't heard any voices yet. Not anything different than I usually hear. So anyways.
That's good. That's good.
It's what happens every time there's an ooh shiny. He falls into it and gets lost for moments at a time.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
All right. So we're going to take a really quick break and come back with that interview with Jason.
Oh. Hey, Kev, Dad's asleep. Let's do an experiment.
What experiment?
The one from Mythbusters, where they put the guy's hand in the water to see if he would pee on himself. Let's try it on Daddy.
Hey, kids, what are y'all doing?
Nothing, Mom.
Do you have your own little geeks? Need some ideas to keep them out of trouble? Well, check out the How to Grow Your Geek podcast.
We have cool kids' books and movie reviews.
We have awesome gaming reviews.
And we have interviews, advice, and a whole lot of fun. Check us out at
HowToGrowYourGeek.net.
And we're back with more Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am still Tim Callender.
I'm still Brett Filipek.
And with us today, we have the Jason Davis from the Babylon
Podcast. Except no substitutions.
Never, ever, ever accept anything less than the original.
I tried one of the cheap knockoffs one time. It just didn't last as long, nor did it have the appropriate flavor.
No.
That's what I'm told.
And people will remember Jason as one of the esteemed members of the Babylon 5 Scripts team. Lucky dog.
We're actually the B5 Books team now.
Oh, Books team. It's
yes, official. For reasons that are apparent for the last several releases, as you'll attest, I'm sure.
And,
yes. And for the release that I have in my hand right now, and that I would like Tim to finally open.
Well, first let's let our listeners understand what the situation is here.
Yes, Jacqueline. Captain
Jacqueline, in her infinite wisdom, decided that torturing Tim would be a fun pastime.
Oh yeah.
And so I got a call from Summer saying you're going to get a box in the mail and don't open it until we do the show.
I'd be worried it's be ticking at that point.
Well, I haven't smelled anything odd, nor has it been making any noises. When I shake it, it sounds relatively solid.
So you might be safe.
Given the proportions, though, it's like a 9x4x1. It's probably black and mysterious. And my God, it's full of stars. All right. All right, I'm going to go ahead and open this. Is that the idea, right? We're going to open this thing?
Yep.
I'm making the first incision now. Now, do I cut the red wire or the black wire? I can never remember.
And I should elaborate that I got a phone call from Captain Jacqueline saying, you're going to receive something on Tuesday. I want you to keep it a surprise for Tim.
Like, yeah, okay. So Summer knows what this all is.
I can do this. Well, a lot of people, if they've already gone to the B5Books.com website, they know what it is. But you and I are amongst the first people to actually hold it in our hands.
All right. Well, I've got the seal broken. Speak, friend, and enter. I've forgotten all my Elvish. So, all right. Okay. Here we go. I'm opening it up. Oh my gosh.
See, it's
I am
not
holding
black.
In my hands a book entitled Crusade: Behind the Scenes.
Yeah.
It's adorned with a, looks like a pre-production drawing for the Excalibur Bridge.
You are correct, sir.
And then the back is the expanded drawing of the Excalibur Bridge.
Mm-hmm. And I love the tagline for this book. It is, as it happened, interviews with the actors, designers, directors, producers, and writers detailing the creation and destruction of the Babylon 5 spin-off series.
Okay, now I got to get through the plastic wrap part of our project here.
Hurry up, hurry up.
Shall we sing a little song while you do it?
I can hum the theme to Jeopardy.
Yeah, do that.
Okay, all right, no, plastic. We can't afford it. We can't afford to pay
right.
The royalties
on
that song. Sorry.
Yeah, there's royalties. Yeah, that's
right. Yeah. Okay, it's just like Happy Birthday. You don't sing Happy Birthday either. It's too expensive.
Yeah. Last thing I want is Alec Trebek coming after me.
Oh, and he will kick your ass. I can guarantee that.
He has mad martial arts skills, I tell you.
That is one angry Canadian, I'll tell you.
First, he's got a mustache, and he doesn't have a mustache. What's up with that? All right, look, I've got this open. Okay, fantastic. Behind the scenes, as it happened, interviews. Yep, Synthetic Worlds Publishing. So wait a minute now. So Synthetic Worlds Publishing, where does Babylon 5 book team come into this? I'm confused now, Jason.
Well, it's the website, b5books.com.
Okay, I gotcha.
Same group.
Same people. All the same people. They've all said Synthetic Worlds on them. That's Joe Straczynski's production company, or it was.
Oh, I gotcha.
Back in the Babylon 5 days. Although you only see the logo on The Gathering.
Senior editor Jason Davis. Mm. Not the Jason
Davis. That means
Davis.
I'm old.
Oh, no, I should add that this is different from a lot of the previous books because it contains photos and sketches
of Tim Earle's concept drawing for Galen's flyer.
Oh, more than just that. More than that.
There's Trulon.
There's over two dozen pictures in there.
Wow.
Virgene Holden. Gary Cole in those god-awful uniforms.
There's a sketch of those god-awful uniforms as well.
Yes, you know, say what you will about whatever TNT did. At least they gave money to redesign those uniforms because, man.
True.
Those were awful.
Have you had a chance to look through it a little bit?
I did.
I'm doing it as...
No. Me, I got it. Oh, I got it yesterday, and I started flipping through it. I started reading some of the interviews. The fact that the interviews are done in chronological order, starting, you know, pre-production and, you know, production in 98 through 99, and even some that were several months after the, you know, show had been canceled officially, even though they said we had 22 episodes and only gave us 13. Hijinks! Shenanigans!
Yeah, right.
Shenanigans.
It literally is, you're reading about it as it's going on. And we have interviews with everybody, literally, from, you know, Joe Straczynski, John Bulick, Gary Cole, all of the actors, producers, composer, Evan Chen. There's an interview in here with Evan Chen.
Very interesting, and, too. I knew nothing about him before I did the book.
Yes, I'm one of the few people who actually liked the soundtrack.
I like it as well.
I liked it. I thought it was good.
Yeah, I liked it.
And I actually bought the CD. I bought the soundtrack because I thought the Pachmara porn music was just hilarious, and I had to have it.
Reason enough, I think.
So tell us how this book snuck in under everyone's radar and came together.
Ah, very, very secretively. I honestly, until last week, I didn't know it was coming out this week. we've been working on it for a while. There was, you mentioned the chronological aspect of it. That was something that we gave a lot of thought to, how it was going to be laid out. What people might not know is the interviews were all conducted by a journalist named Joe Nazzaro,
mm-hmm.
who, I know Joe's name from back when I was a fan before I ever had any professional interaction on a Babylon 5 sort of scenario, you know. I knew him because he was always the guy who wrote all the interviews about Babylon 5 that were in TV Zone or Starburst or those sorts of a lot of British magazines at the time. And we've republished all of his interviews from Crusade in their entirety. We say 70% of what's in there has not been published before because you're getting the actual transcripts as opposed to something that's just excerpted for a larger interview in a magazine or, you know, and they're always constrained by word count. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, some of those multi-page interviews in there, you know, 7 or 8 pages, they're not, you know, they were never printed in that to that extent before. They were, you know, excerpts were taken from them. And even then, because Crusade was canceled relatively quickly, I mean, there's only 3 months that you could have a magazine out while Crusade was on the air. A lot of them went unpublished in their entirety because there was no market for it. The show was gone. It's over. So it was great to find these and put them out there. and have this record of the show that was done at the time the show was being produced. And it's kind of fun because the chronological aspect of it, with each time there's a setback, whether it's the production shut down after Each Night I Dream of Home, or whether it's after they filmed Appearances and Other Deceits and they're waiting for the next episode to be filmed, you just get this sense of, okay, this is not normal for TV. What are we waiting for here? What's TNT doing? And because we know the story from, you know, retrospect, we can tell that things are going terribly bad, terribly wrong with the show. And the people there, you know, they have to have the people who are living it and who are, these are their jobs, you know, they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know that the thing's going terribly wrong, that the show is going to be dead after 13 episodes. It's got drama to it. It's a dramatic little book because people are coming back and saying, oh, you know, they just shut us down to redo the costumes and stuff. And there's no talk of the infamous Ain't It Cool memo that was going around at the time, except for in the Straczynski interview. They mention it there. But, yeah, it's a neat little trip through history, I think.
So are most of these... Were most of these published in other magazines, or were they just in the Babylon 5 Crusade magazine, or a variety of magazines? Because I was trying to see if it said where they were published, when they were published, because I think that would be like a nice little cross-reference in there.
I honestly couldn't tell you where most of them were. They were all over the place. There were some of them that when I read them, I was like, oh, I remember that. And there were others of them that I had no idea where they came from. There's an interview with Larry DiTullio in there, which is probably one of my favorites, where he details the script he was writing for the show when it was shut down. He never finished writing the script, but he tells you, I mean, point by point, what was happening in that episode. And I found that fascinating. I didn't even know the episode had a title. I knew that Larry DiTullio was working on something when the show ended, but it's not like the two Joe Straczynski scripts and the Fiona Avery script that were published afterwards, because they were finished, they'd written them, you know, and they published them online. This was a story I'd never knew existed, and it's in the book. It's right there, called The Walls of Hell, and you can read what would have happened in that episode. And you can also read, even more interesting to me, are the constraints under which it had to be written, like the sort of laundry list of things that had to be done in the episode. And it's very interesting. I would have loved to have seen the episode made. I would love for there to be a script to the episode, but unfortunately he never got that far.
Huh. Oh, woe is us.
I mean, yeah, it's really depressing to hear that Janet Greek was, you know, already prepping the episode to the ends of the earth when the plug was pulled. I mean, she had already prepared everything. They were ready to shoot it that next Monday.
Wow. That's harsh. I mean, out of the blue, huh? I mean, you'd think they'd get a little more notice than that, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, one of the other things I learned, one of the little things, was Mira Furlan's husband, Goran Gajic, had prepared to direct Well of Forever. He was all set up to direct that, and that was the first hiatus after Each Night I Dream of Home. I mean, he had, you know, he set up all his blocking and all that good stuff, and they pulled the plug, and when they came back around and the show started up again, I guess he wasn't available for that slot, so then Janet Greek ended up directing that episode. But I just think about it, you know, the man who directed the long title in season 5 and All My Dreams Torn Asunder, you know, he's very, very more esoteric in his directing, and I would have loved to have seen something like The Well of Forever as directed by Goran Gajic, with, you know, sort of more outre camera work and stuff like that. I don't know.
I'm sorry. This is one of those.
He's deep and he's lost.
Yeah. Him. Well, it's funny because there's a couple times when you guys have brought up, you know, the cancellation of TNT, and I just happened to light my eyes on something here. Like, this is back toward the back of the book. This is with John Copeland. The first question is, and this is dated 29 January 1999. What are the facts behind the rumors that TNT is canceling Crusade? And Copeland's response is, if you're getting things that say we're canceled, it's bullshit. TNT is having a vision crisis of who they are and if science fiction is even right for their channel. We also have a TNT-induced script crisis that made us pull up our February hiatus till now. And then he goes, and the next paragraph is about hiring an actor to play a character, and TNT loves them, put them in the scripts, and so they write the scripts, then they say, you know what, we don't really want to exercise the guy's option. And so they have to rewrite everything. Wow. I mean, this is just...
There's a lot of that in there.
Yeah, this how no holds barred is this, Jason?
It is uncensored. It's what you're reading there is are the transcripts. That's there's stuff in there. There's stuff in a John Copeland interview. I'll leave it to people to find it. But there's stuff talked about that you don't see talked about very often.
Now, without trying to spoil too much of what's in the book, because this really, this looks like one of those, you're going to sit down and open it up and then get lost for the next 3 hours just reading it from wherever you get in. Given the concept of understanding being a three-edged sword, we know Joe's side of things for the most part. Has anybody ever gotten anything from the TNT side of thing that might cast them less as just evil bad guys doing nefarious things?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I've never heard anything from their side, certainly. Obviously the interviews in there are still sort of conducted with most of the interviews in there, probably 90% of them, people still think the show's going to go on. Maybe the last 10%, a few of the people are thinking, yeah, this is over. Definitely the last interview with Mr. Kim and Margene Holden, obviously the final Margene Holden in the interview in there is a year after Crusade aired, and she's already on another show.
Right.
So, we don't even... This book, as it says on the cover, as Summer so elegantly read out, is an as-it-happens account of the show. For something more retrospective, I'm wondering if Summer's read the introduction on the first page, if she noticed anything interesting there.
I read it.
The fact that it's just generally interesting because of what it is?
Wait, are we talking the first note or the first, or the actual intro?
The introduction, before the note. There's a there's something in the third paragraph that I think might interest you. Oh, dead air. We have dead air. I'll keep talking to you.
I don't want dead air.
I'm anticipation. I feel like the person who's picked last in kickball, because I got nothing over here.
Finally, I'm not the kid standing there by himself. I like that feeling.
No, it's mostly about how Joe Nazzaro visited the set between the filming of the Call to Arms and the demise of Crusade, and how the interviews were arranged in order, and how an editor's note will set the stage for what was happening with the show. All right, what did I miss?
You've missed what I was going to draw your attention to, which is, effectively, in the book, we're announcing, and now I'm announcing here on your show, that there's going to be a multi-volume series called Crusade, What the Hell Happened, by J. Michael Straczynski.
Oh, I see it right there. Yeah, okay.
That one, yeah. Well,
and
wait.
That's going to be your retrospective perspective on the thing, as well as your Crusade scripts.
Aha, so this is going to answer Tom Smith's question, huh? He says he has an issue with Crusade in his 5 years song, parody song.
Oh, gotcha.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. I, on the other hand, do not agree with Tom, but hey.
What is the issue? I'm curious.
Oh, he doesn't say. He just says, I've seen Crusade and you're going to be sorry. is the line in the song. So
that's what we're working on now.
I did miss that completely.
So why roll this out before you roll the scripts out?
A lot of work being done, clearances being sought. We have a lot of external material we're putting in them that requires to get them get it all sorted out before we can release the books.
Yes, the slow plodding pace of lawyers checking T's and dotting I's.
So that's more difficult to get out than the what the hell happened kind of stuff.
Seems to me.
I guess maybe this is you know, as we've established, this is kind of the no holes barred revelation of Crusade and what went wrong and what happened. You would think to get that out, that would take more work than just getting scripts published and out.
Well, not really, because all the material came from one place.
Okay.
If it had been interviews conducted by lots of different people, it would have been more complicated.
Gotcha. All right.
But they're all Joe's interviews, so it was a sort of a one-stop shop.
So what for you, Jason, going through this, what was probably the biggest surprise that you came across while putting this book together, while editing it?
I'd have to go back to the Larry DiTullio story, because that just blew me away. Like I said, I didn't know. I thought I knew everything there was to know about the episodes that were at least written.
Right.
So I was surprised to find that there were, you know, I guess it's really, Larry talks about a trilogy being written, which I knew something about that. I'd heard something about that, but I never knew what the plot of any of the three episodes in this trilogy were, or how it was impacted by what TNT was doing, which alludes to what you were saying earlier when you were talking about the casting of the actor and so on and so forth.
Right.
Aside from that, it's just interesting to see. I don't know. Dr. Chambers had a different name before production started on the show.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Hoffman?
That fascinated me.
Yeah, I'm like, where did that come from?
Yeah. The idea that that one of the characters was left fairly ambiguous so that they could cast anybody who walked in the room that they liked. Yeah. And stuff like that is discussed in the interviews and the reasons behind it. And it's a nifty piece. I really enjoyed going through it. Like I said, it was a bunch of stuff. There was a lot of stuff that I had never heard before. And, I mean, obviously I wouldn't be a member of the B5 Books team if I didn't know a little something about Babylon 5.
Right.
Its respective universe. So
I will.
Kind of cool to get something new, you know, 10 years after the fact.
I will tell you something that I learned from the book that I didn't consciously realize before, but in retrospect, having sat through so many, many episodes, you know, of the ending credits, I should have put one and one together before. I never realized that Max Eilerson, his name was taken from Pam Eilerson. Never put that together, and I am so disappointed in myself that I didn't do that before.
I wondered. I just thought it was a coincidence.
And now you have a picture of her.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that in there, actually, as I was leafing through.
Never put that. I should literally, my brain should have made that connection decade ago, but it didn't.
All right, so Jason, with the three-volume What the Hell Happened book that's coming out, and I assume that's going to be written by Joe, correct?
It will be akin to the Babylon 5 script books. They will be, you know, introductions and the scripts and so forth.
Okay, so that's what that is. That's not just three volumes of him going off on a screed about.
Although that would be interesting too.
Okay, all right.
So wait, happened?
I think the title gives you a sense of the tone, at least.
Mm-hmm. So are those three volumes going to be in addition to the actual scripts? Or are
no, no, those will be the script books.
Okay, that's the title of the three script books. Okay.
Correct.
All right. Thought you were giving me more Crusade than I can handle there, but I'm good.
While I'm sure Joe could fill three volumes of just being angry about Crusade, I'm not sure he'd want it.
Well, has time softened any of the edges on that for Joe, or is that something that we really won't know until we get the script books and his introductions?
That's his title on the book.
Okay.
Does that answer your question somewhat?
Well, yes and no, but I mean, you know, there's different ways of saying what the hell happened. You know, you can say what the hell happened, or you know, what the hell happened. You know, one's a query, one's invective, so.
I'm thinking this is more of a statement. What the hell happened, how I saw it.
Right.
Yeah. Nobody can have a show that's screwed with in that way and not come away from it mad about it. I have a feeling this will help him exorcise some demons. You know?
Sure.
Because he can, you know, he can get it all out on paper. People can see what happened. I'm sure that's kind of what was intended with the commentary on the Crusade DVD that got messed with.
Right.
So, that, you know, it's a exorcism of sorts.
Now, on a more general comment, because Summer and I have had conversations on occasion about Crusade, and I enjoyed it. I think Summer's a much bigger fan than I am, but that's not because I didn't like it. But I think we both have a sense that this was going to be one of the greatest science fiction shows never made. And I was thinking about that, and I'm wondering how much of that is truth and how much of that is just because we only got 13 episodes of it, and then we started thinking about how fantastic B5 was, that in our minds we have elevated this series to mythic proportions.
I'm sure it's some of both. If you were to take the first 13 episodes of Crusade and put them against the first 13 episodes of Babylon 5, I think there's no question that Crusade is more elegantly written and produced and acted, I would say, than the first 13 episodes of Babylon 5. I think that if it had continued with the same learning curve that Babylon 5 had, there's no question that it would have been a better show at the end of the day. But on the other hand, we can all talk about, you know, shows that get canceled and saying they were genius and, you know, they may have been embarrassing themselves by the middle of the second season.
Mm-hmm. My fondness for Crusade comes from the promise of the story that was being told. The fact that it was going to be different from the story we had in Babylon 5, that it was going to be more complex than the story we had in Babylon 5, and that it seemed to be starting off faster. We, you know, we had a literally 3/4 of a year of slow build-up before pieces started to come together in Babylon 5. We were already starting to get pieces coming together by episode 6 or 7, and the loss of that story to me is what just keeps it shining bright. You know, the possibility of that could have been an awesome story, and we didn't get it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I still worry about what the apocalypse box was, for God's sake. Keeps me up late.
Thank you.
At
night. That was the mystery for me. And I thought it was curious that there was Well of Souls, if I remember the title correctly, where they find the weird creature that basically shows them all the flashbacks.
Path of Sorrows.
Path of Sorrows, thank you. I am so sorry that I got that wrong.
That's what I'm here for.
There was a lot of backstory established in that episode that I wonder if, you know, is that in Babylon 5 that would have been strung out across a season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he was, I think overall he was more confident and he was opening more doors faster. I think maybe Babylon 5, when you're getting into something like that for the first time, you want to make sure that all of your eggs are dispensed slowly so as not to run out of any of them. And I think there was a confidence in Crusade that was allowing him to throw open those doors and revelations a little bit faster than they happened on the first year of Babylon 5.
Was it that, or do you think he was trying to grab people in as quick as he could?
Well, it's always going to be both, because, I mean, in television, you survive based on your ratings, so there's always going to be the need to have people watch as soon as possible.
I wonder if part of it is, though, that, you know, the first season of Babylon 5 was as much just establishing the universe and new aliens and introducing, I mean, let's be frank, a fair amount of it is just educating viewers that this isn't Star Trek.
That's true.
And Babylon 5, by the time Crusade rolls out, B5 is an established universe. So you don't have to tell people what Minbari are and what Drazi are and Earth Alliance and so forth, so on. That portion of the universe is already established, and so you can get to the heart of the matter maybe a little more. You know, that might be part of it as well.
That's definitely a possibility, I would think. Still, because it was a new show on a new network, I'm sure he was being pushed to make it a little bit more explanatory. And that's something that's come out in various, you know, comments here and there, is that there was the pull from TNT to actually separate it from Babylon 5 and make it less like Babylon 5. One of the interviews in the book talks about how after the shutdown, TNT didn't want them to visit Babylon 5. So that's, you know, they were trying to establish their own show, I think, and didn't want it tied to Babylon 5. So that's why you saw Captain Lockley as little as you did. Was that a sigh of frustration?
Yes, it was.
I did it a lot while I was working on this book.
So what else can you tease us about with stuff that's coming up for the three volumes of Crusade?
Oh, well, I the title pretty much is my tease. that was the bullet I brought with me. Sorry.
Okay.
No, it's a three-volume set. I can't give you a date. There's still clearances to be sorted out. Mm-hmm. But we are actively working on them.
Is there a window in which you're shooting for release of the first book?
Yes, the future.
Gee, thanks.
You know, the problem is always in motion is the future.
Yes, it is.
Thanks, Yoda. Appreciate
thank
that.
You, Matt.
No problem. All right. Thank you for joining us today, Jason, and teasing us with the upcoming Crusade script books. And I have to thank you. Thank you for a job well done on this.
Thank you very much.
Behind the scenes, it's delish.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, sir.
Thank Captain Jack.
The book will be available tomorrow morning.
The book will be available from the website b5books.com on Thursday, February 18th. Go order your copy ASAFP because it's worth it. It's more than worth it. Okay, we're going to take a really quick break and come back with some emails.
How to continue a television series after a major actor has left the cast. Part 1. The Quatermass Method. Simply recast a new actor in the original role. Hope that no one notices that a familiar character now looks completely different. This was also famously used in the James Bond films.
For more about British science fiction television, listen to the British Invaders podcast at www.britishinvaders.com.
And there we have it, our first taste of Crusade.
Yes, how'd that taste, Summer?
Ah, that was delicious, like filet mignon.
Wow. Wow.
Like an ice cold bottle of Zima.
There you go.
Ew.
Well, look, let's stick on with the Crusade theme. I've got a couple emails here, actually. As it plays out. Only one, but that's okay too. This will kick some stuff off, though.
We'll draw it out.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've got more than one email, but just one I think is regarding Crusade. This comes to us from Al, who asks, what order is Crusade going to be reviewed? I've got the UK DVD box set, and the order of the episodes doesn't make sense. Among other issues, the crew use the Technomage nanovirus before they discover it, and the Lockley-Gideon relationship is in the incorrect order. JMS has provided two alternate sequences, the true in-universe chronological order and his preferred order. And he Al puts a link to a Wikipedia article. He says, I now watch Crusade in the chronological order as defined on Wikipedia. I don't know if this is the best order, but it is better than the DVD order. The uniforms keep switching around, but I just put this down to Earth Force bureaucracy not being able to make up its mind. I think a corrected episode order would give a fresh look to Crusade and be respectful of JMS's original vision of the show. What does everyone else think?
Huh.
So we've got the list here. The chronological order, as described, I believe, by JMS himself.
Uh-huh.
And I thought we were going with the chronological order, because isn't that what the U.S. DVD is in?
Yes, I believe. No, I don't think so.
It's been a while since I've taken it down and looked at it. I know the order of the DVD set is different than the order that it was broadcast on TNT. I do know that.
And maybe that might be the preferred, JMS preferred order.
Yeah, so I remember that the order that was aired in and the order JMS preferred were completely polar opposite from each other.
Yeah.
Like I think he preferred, I think, what was the first episode? Was it, the first episode, was it Warzone?
Well, that's it's listed here as episode 108. Episode 101 is The Needs of Earth.
Right. But I think that go ahead.
No, but that The Needs of Earth is about the sixth episode down in the list. Warzone does open things up. I do remember he wanted Warzone to be the opening episode because it was just jumping you right into it, and TNT came back and said, as I recall, now I'm going to have to go through my little gift here in the Apocalypse box. JMS wanted Warzone, as I recall, because it was just getting right to it. Let's just jump into it, as we were discussing earlier. And TNT came back and said, no, we need something that's a little more expository. And I think part of what sweetened the deal was they gave him extra money for sets and new uniforms and all that kind of stuff.
And it's kind of hard when you're getting a bribe. It's kind of hard to say no.
Yeah.
And this is one reason why I love you, Tim.
Why?
Because I know you'll talk long enough for me to get up, go across the room, grab the DVD off the shelf, and get back before anyone even knows I was gone. All right, so the DVD starts off with Warzone, then The Long Road, then The World Forever, then The Path of Sorrows.
Okay, that's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think that's the original episode airing, though, wasn't it?
It sounds like it.
I thought this was in a different order than the original airing, though.
No, I think it went Warzone, Long Road, Well of Forever, then Path of Sorrows.
Yeah, Well of Forever was like the second or third one in there. I remember that.
Yeah.
Because that was one of those things that was like, was really, because here's the thing that I do remember about it. God, I can't wait to sit down and start watching these again, but The Well of Forever was one of those that I remember stuff was starting to leak out about TNT wanting the quote-unquote sexual explorer added to the crew to make it, you know, a little more. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
And then in Well of Forever, there were the big jellyfish things that were basically trying to stomp Excalibur. And yep. I just sat there watching that going, is that JMS's backhanded way of giving TNT what they wanted?
I think so.
But on his terms? I mean, but it was one of those, because I remember Well of Forever, it was like, man, the first two episodes are really good, but this just isn't doing it for me.
I stand corrected. This is in air date chronological order.
I'm looking at
the original air dates right here, and it is in perfect air date order from June through August of 99.
So that's the one you've got, Summer. Now, what's the other one that's out there? Is there another one that actually has it in JMS's order, or do you have to sit there and just kind of watch it and piece it together yourself?
I thought that one of the DVD sets out there, whether it was the U.S. version or the U.K. version, was in a different order than the broadcast order, but... So, yeah, we're going to have to just, skip around. Seriously.
Well, I have an idea. When we get to it, why don't we review it in all three versions and
go through it three different times?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, that'll stretch out the show.
Jeffrey would send a hunter-killer team after us.
you're probably right.
There wouldn't be enough tequila in the world to get Jeffrey through all that. All right, so there we go. That's something we're going to have to hash out, figure out how to... do a little more research, figure out how we're going to review Crusade when we get to that. We have sort of a two-parter here from Mike Tuck, who's emailed the show before. And he asks or writes, I watched the movie The Last Starfighter on DVD recently. I haven't seen the movie in years, and I'd forgotten about it mostly. When I watched it again, I noticed some things that were very similar to Babylon 5. For one, the bad guy aliens in the movie looked very much like Minbari, with bald heads on top and gray hair that circled their heads. When the camera was off a distance from these aliens, the hair looked like the Minbari bone circling their heads. Secondly, there is also a character in Starfighter who is somewhat flamboyant named Centauri.
Yep.
Same spelling and pronunciation. Also, on the DVD crew interviews, they make a big deal out of the fact that Last Starfighter was one of the first movies to use CGI special effects for space battle sequences.
Yep, I remember that.
There was also a lizard-like alien species on the movie that looked similar to the aliens in B5 called The Game. And the good guy's spaceships in the movie were called Star Guns, looking slightly similar to B5 Star Furies with the X-Wing look. I'm not saying that everything in the Starfighter movie wound up in B5, but these few similarities seem too much to be coincidental. Should also be noted that Starfire borrowed some ideas from Star Wars, obviously. I never read that JMS was inspired by The Last Starfighter, but it seems like he was. It even seems like he got the idea of using CGI effects on B5 from Starfighter. While we all want our favorite writers to be completely original in their creations, that is seldom the case. There have been many famous books and movies that were copied from other source material over the years. Still, I think that JMS was a good writer and made enough changes in his stories to make it his own for the most part. This all may seem defamatory toward JMS, but I'm one of the biggest Babylon 5 fans around. So.
He meant yeah, he meant Drazi, not Game, for the lizard-like race,
okay.
Right?
Oh, I don't know. I can't say I ever saw Last Starfighter in its entirety. It was
classic.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I came away from Last Starfighter, again, it was one of those. I never went to it in the theater for no good reason, and the few times that it was on TV, I caught it. What I glommed onto more than anything else was Meg Wiley, who played the kid's grandmother. She was the head Talosian in the menagerie.
She was, they're right, absolutely,
you
right.
Are such a Trek geek.
I know, it's so pathetic.
I did know that though. That's wild. I totally forgot about that. Now, to answer that email though, I don't know that I'm going to sit there and say there's a whole lot of coincidence there. I just don't see it. I mean, trust me, I'm a huge Last Starfighter fan. I've seen it more times than I can count. But that's a stretch for me.
Well, you know, how much of it is a case of you know, you're just working in the same genre, and just by the nature of it, you're going to have overlap.
I think there's a lot of that. I don't look at that at the universe the Last Starfighter was in with the bald headed guys. Did they look like the Minbari? No, not to me.
To be honest, I mean Centauri, Alpha Centauri. It's a popular name because it sounds kind of
exactly, and people have heard
it was
of it.
One of the top five most names, I think, last year.
It's what?
It was one of the top five most popular girls' names last year.
Right.
Anyway, sorry.
That's okay. We're going to have to sit you down and make you watch Last Starfighter.
That's fine.
I mean, it's dated. I will be the first to tell you it is dated. You're going to watch it and sit there and look at the space battle sequence and think, oh my God, did they do this on a TRS-80 back in 1982? You're going to think it. But, man, it was just a kick-ass movie.
Didn't they do the graphics on an Amiga, though?
I think it was an Amiga. I think it was an Amiga, either an Amiga 2000 is what I think they used, which I think I owned an Amiga 1000 back in the day. I know my inner nerd is showing, but it was a good movie. I just don't think it had. I don't even think if Straczynski had planned that or any kind of a tribute, that's gonna be one of those things that he may sit there and say on his deathbed, "Yes, I did it." And then you know, it's kind of like Carly Simon's, you know, "You're So Vain" song. When she dies, she'll have in her will to say who that song was about. Same thing, maybe.
You're So Vain, may probably think that song is about you.
Exactly, right?
Don't you?
Exactly. It is about me, as a matter of fact. Even though it was written 2 years before I was born.
As far as that goes, you know, if you're really looking for where Straczynski mined story ideas, Lord of the Rings is the most obvious source material. And I think Straczynski himself even acknowledges, you know, I don't think he comes out and, you know, it's not a blatant ripoff, but let's face it, Lorien is obviously a tip of the hat to Lothlorien.
Yeah.
No, and yes. Actually, Mike, and he actually wrote a novella here, and he references some of the Lord of the Rings connection, if you will. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's just one of those things. You know, mm-hmm. And again, I think despite all that, Babylon 5 as a story stands on its own as its own thing. You know, it uses it. I read an interesting commentary by Samuel Delany some years back, and he talks about genre fiction in general and science fiction specifically. The fact is that over time, as the tropes of a genre are developed, later writers are able to refer to those tropes and everybody knows what they're talking about. So they don't have to, you know, warp drive and hyperspace are prime examples. There was, you know, Doc Smith uses a concept of hyperspace in the Lensman books, and he explains it to a certain detail. Babylon 5, Straczynski doesn't have to explain what hyperspace is. It's a trope of science fiction. We all know what hyperspace is.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so there's, you know, there's a lot of that in any science fiction show that's come along in the last 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, well, and I think that is, it's an easy way for whoever's doing that show to not get so, do a whole bunch of exposition about, you know, how they get from point A to point B. And I think, so, I mean, cool, works for me. What I truly think about B5 when I think about this, I'm a huge Battlestar Galactica fan, the reimagined version of it. And truly, I look at what they did with B5 as something that probably other shows like BSG probably today pulled from. And the bad part for B5 was, you know, they were on the forefront of it and it was new and therefore wasn't as widely accepted as BSG was. Yep. But I think that shows like BSG have a whole lot of thanking to do to people like Straczynski for paving that way.
Right. I agree completely.
You know, that to me more than anything else will be the long running impact of this show.
Well, something that I have been amazed to learn as we've been doing the podcast for close to 5 years now is how groundbreaking a series Babylon 5 was in ways that you would never have imagined. And I mean, it's easy to say it's groundbreaking in terms of science fiction on television. That's obvious. You just watch the show. But when Jeffrey and other crew members and actors come on and tell us about the Babylon 5 contract, which allows union members to work below union rates just so that the show can stay within budget, it was pioneered on Babylon 5. When we interviewed Tom Robertson, one of the editors, he said that the concept of nonlinear digital editing was pioneered on Babylon 5, and now everybody does it.
Mm-hmm.
And the examples go on, and it's just astounding to think about.
Oh yeah, I agree, totally agree.
So
lovely.
Anyway. He also, Mike also adds a P.S. That I want to read because I think it's amusing. He's says that he read the latest Futurama comic book. Says it referenced Babylon 5 in a joke and went like this. Leela says, and the worst part of it is we're lost in space. And Fry replies, at least we're not in Babylon 5. That show gave me a headache.
Nice.
All right, here we go. We've got this is an email from Tom. Wants to know, will the crew of the Babylon 5 podcast be attending any conventions in the nearby future? I enjoy your weekly podcast. Well, Tom, thank you for enjoying the podcast. We greatly appreciate that. And if you're willing to take care of my plane ticket, hotel reservation, and con badge, I would be happy to attend any convention in your nearby future.
I will say that the core Farpoint Media crew is very likely going to all or mostly be in attendance at Phoenix Comic Con here in Phoenix in May, which I believe is Memorial Day weekend.
Yes, it is.
So,
all right. So there you go.
So Brett and I will be here.
I will indeed.
I'll send a giant cutout of myself and then, you know.
Oh, that could be cool. We could get like a life-size
Tim.
A life-size Tim in the Londo artwork.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. All right. That'll be fun.
Perfect.
And then we get the Vorlon one for Jeffrey.
Yeah, right.
Is Jeffrey coming out for that, Mike? Do you know?
I have not heard. It's all going to depend on the schedule. That's May. Hell, I don't even know what's going to happen in May yet. So we're planning on attending. We'll be there in some aspect. I have no idea what it's going to be, but we'll be there.
We'll be there. I know there's going to be a slice of sci-fi there. I don't believe there will be a B5 there because it happens not on a Wednesday.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm told there might be a B5 panel.
Yeah, I'm thinking that the panels may be the thing that's going to happen there. As far as the live recording for Slice, even, I'm not sure what's going to happen there. We're going to see how we'll have to do the logistics on it. It's all going to depend on whether or not we can get a stream or not.
Right.
I don't know what kind of internet connectivity we're going to have available. So
it's the convention center downtown. I'm sure they're chock full.
Oh, don't assume anything.
Drink a lot of beer, Mike, and you'll have
never
a power.
Never assume anything.
Cool.
All right. One last one here. This comes to us from, I'm going to butcher this. I apologize. Yui from Herford, Germany. And he writes, "Hi, folks. Just wanted to say a big thank you for all your hard work on the B5 podcast. I only found out about it a couple of months ago, and now I'm busy catching up on all the cast interviews. Love the Stephen First episode. He must be a blast in real life. All the best. Happy New Year to the entire crew, and keep up the good work."
That would be Herford, Germany.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And probably Iwi or something that I can't wrap my American tongue around. So, yes, thank you for the thumbs up. And by now, hopefully, you've heard the amazing Jerry Doyle interview.
We had a lot of fun with that one.
That was a good one.
I still want people, all the B5 fans, wherever you happen to be, the United States, Canada, England, Ireland, Scotland, Germany, Netherlands, Italy, France, wherever you are.
Cambodia.
Yeah, Singapore. We actually have fans in Singapore. If you happen to have a friend who's a Babylon 5 fan, do not assume they know about this podcast. Tell them about it.
We get email regularly from people saying, "I've been a longtime fan, just found your show, and then I've taken the last 2.5 months to catch up." And it's like, man, that would make my head hurt.
Gotten more emails like that in the past year than I thought would be possible. I'm like, hey, where are all the B5 fans? They're huge B5 fans, and they haven't found us yet.
Yeah.
It's like it. I'm sure other podcasts have talked about Babylon 5. If you search Babylon 5 and podcasts, we're the first one that comes up. So is no one searching for us? We're always the best one. But Google says we're first, which is even more rocking.
Even better, yes. Don't need to be the best, just need to be the first.
So I'm going to borrow from J.C. Hutchins' playbook and ask you all to be minions of propaganda and tell your friends who are B5 fans. It's like, hey, I know you liked B5, but did you know there was a podcast? Tell them about it, and then we'll go have some fun. Any more emails?
Nope, that's it for now.
That's it for now. Well, thank you, one and all, for joining us this evening. I know a lot of people were hoping we were talking about Sleeping in Light, which will it'll be next week. So, Hank.
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, I'm one of those people who's glad we didn't talk about it, because, again, I have not gone to Costco to get my next big box of Kleenex.
So we're telling you now, prepare. You know, be prepared. What's that, the Boy Scout motto or something?
Yes,
something like that.
Go get your Kleenex. Yeah, go get your teddy bear and your warm cocoa to comfort you while you're watching this episode, and we'll get into that next week. But if you want to send in your own email, that email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. You can also record and send in your own messages if you don't want to try to wait for Gary to hang up the phone for the voicemail. Come to the website, babylonpodcast.com. Join in on the discussion in the comments there. And you can also join into the comments on the forums over at farpointforums.com. Please come to the website, donate, keep the electric bill paid here, because the weather's starting to warm up and we need to keep the equipment cool so it will still run properly. And if you want to call in your own voicemail message, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
Here we began to get answers about what really happened on Crusade.
That's right.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.